This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The war between Israel and Hamas is definitely going to affect the global economy. Looking at that, it's not the only war that is happening. So it's a war that is on top of other wars like Russia and Ukraine, and then we have also Sudan.
That is Elliot Massetti, professor of business at DeVry University in Ohio, who says the Israeli-Hamas conflict could deal a serious blow to global economic development. Details coming up also. Mediators say Sudan's warring parties have committed to implementing confidence-building measures. And Somalia experiences the worst flooding in decades. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Many economists think the war between Israel and Hamas could deal a serious blow to global economic development. Elliot Massetti is professor of business at DeVry University in the U.S. state of Ohio. He says any Middle East conflict in these uncertain times sends tremors throughout the world's economy because the region is, one, a crucial supplier of energy, and secondly, it is home to some of the world's busiest shipping routes.
The war between Israel and Hamas is definitely going to affect the global economy. Looking at that, it's not the only war that is happening. So it's a war that is on top of other wars like Russia and Ukraine, and then we have also Sudan, and now we have Israel and Hamas. And looking at what is happening with neighboring countries, you know, countries are supporting their allies. We know Iran, we know Hezbollah in Lebanon. So it's looking like it's going to be a regional war. Knowing exactly what the world gets from the Middle East, which is oil, diesel, and petrol, that's going to go up. And it has already started to go up in countries like Zimbabwe that imports a lot of petrol and diesel from countries in the Middle East. And the relationship of African countries in particular to countries like Iran, that is being pulled into the conflict indirectly by its support of Hamas, by its support of Hezbollah, by its support of other militant groups in Iraq and also in Syria. That's likely to affect a key ally of African countries like Zimbabwe, which is Iran. So the trade between Middle Eastern countries is definitely going to be affected. And then we're looking at refugees as well that are going to, you know, get out of those conflict zones. That's another thing that is going to stress economies of those neighboring countries, and also the United Nations and the United States are going to be called into action to help those countries. And that's the global economy we are talking. We live in a global village, by the way.
Yes, the Middle East is home to also several of the world's busiest shipping routes, including the Suez Canal, the Red Sea, the Persian Gulf, and the Strait of Hormuz. All these will heighten the economic peril associated with this escalation of war in Israel and Hamas.
Definitely it's going to affect the supply chain of goods going to different parts of the world, because a conflict zone is going to be indiscriminate to its attack, and workers won't be able to go to work to make sure the supply chain is going to operate as normal. So we are going to expect to experience some delays in products moving to different parts of the world, and those delays are going to make things expensive. Or maybe as we get into Christmas here in the United States of America and throughout the whole world, some of the products that people normally buy may be in short supply.
And also, Professor, Iran is the world's eighth largest producer of crude, and that would be at risk in the event of an escalation, particularly if Tehran is subjected to a renewed tightening of U.S. sanctions, which they estimate would remove up to 1 million barrels a day from global output.
Still going to be a problem again, and we are still starting to see it in Zimbabwe, for example, where petrol and diesel prices have already gone up, driving all products. But I'm not giving any excuse to African governments to just say because of the war that is happening in another part of the world, that's why their economy is not doing good. That's a fact. and every country must have contingency plans to work against those world geopolitical events that are happening. But for sure, with Iran and its relationship with ever since the liberation struggle with a country like Zimbabwe, whatever it is selling to Zimbabwe may be on hold, and then being on hold or may be expensive, and because of that, it's going to affect the economy of those poor countries like Zimbabwe.
And lastly, Professor, there is a humanitarian catastrophe in Sudan, and actually right now, the world press, nobody is actually talking about Sudan anymore.
Exactly. That's where, us as Africans have, problems with some world powers. Now they are talking about the war that is happening between Israel and Hamas as if it is the only one, and not even covering the war in Sudan, where now it has been going on for months now. What is going to happen in those poor countries? A conflict zone happening anywhere, like me, for example, in Sudan, it must affect all of us, and we should take action to make sure we prevent that, and also make sure we support those people who are in that situation, especially women and children.
That was Elliot Masote, professor of business at DeVry University. He spoke to me from the state of Ohio. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and top diplomats from the Group of Seven announced a unified stance on the Israeli-Hamas war today, condemning Hamas, supporting Israel's right to self-defense, and calling for humanitarian pauses to speed aid to desperate civilians in the Gaza Strip. Blinken met with his counterparts from Britain, Canada, France, Germany, Japan, Italy in Tokyo before issuing a statement on their unified stance. Blinken said he also briefed his colleagues on talks with Israeli leaders on pauses and concrete steps on minimizing harm to Palestinians in Gaza. He said Israel had repeatedly said there is no going back to October 6th, the day before the Hamas attack. To bring us up to date on today's developments in the Israeli-Hamas conflict, we have reporter Linda Grantstein on the line. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Linda.
Thank you, Yehia.
So, what is the latest development today?
Well, there actually is an interesting development, which is that both Qatar and Egypt are reporting that they're very close to a partial deal, which would mean the release of 10 to 15 hostages in exchange for a 1 to 2 day ceasefire. Now, Israel is not confirming this, but has said that it is open to humanitarian pauses in exchange for the freedom of the hostages. Assumedly, those who would be freed would be non-Israeli nationals or the very old or people who were very wounded. But it's the first movement that we've seen on the hostage issue in close to 2 weeks. And in addition, the king of Thailand said a couple of days ago that there are 24 Thai hostages, that they're all, he has received information that they're all still alive and that they also are close to a release. Now, during that 1 to 2 day ceasefire, more humanitarian aid would get into Gaza. Israel is concerned, though, that also more equipment or things that Hamas needs would get in. Israel opened a humanitarian corridor from the north of Gaza to the south, and thousands of civilians who until now had not left the north of Gaza where their homes are, now given the heavy fighting that's been going on the last couple of days, have now left. There were several thousand yesterday and an additional several thousand today.
Wow. So Gaza's Hamas-run health ministry says more than 10,500 people have been killed in the territory since then, while the UN is warning of an increasingly dire humanitarian situation there. Talk to us about the way the UN is actually describing the situation.
Yes, I mean, it's very bad, and it seems to be getting worse. There is some humanitarian aid getting in, but you have tens of thousands of people sheltering in UN facilities. There's not enough food. There's not enough medicine. Apparently, the water problem is better than it was, but people are sleeping in the streets or crowded into, you know, four families crowded into one classroom in a UN school. The airstrikes are continuing. Israel says that it carries out airstrikes in the south of Gaza only when it identifies a specific Hamas target. But in the north of Gaza, I actually just came right now from the Gaza border, and I was at Kfar Aza, which is one of the kibbutzim that was overrun by Hamas on October 7th, and I think at least 62 people were killed and another bunch taken hostage, and I saw, you know, the evidence of this fighting and houses totally burnt and totally destroyed. And you hear the booms every few seconds of the Israeli artillery attacking Gaza from Israel. And they're very, very loud. And the first few times I really flinched. And then after about 15, 20 minutes, I kind of got used to it. But there's constant Israeli artillery fire on Gaza.
And U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and top diplomats, like I mentioned earlier, from the Group of Seven, announced a unified stance on the Israeli-Hamas war today. So Blinken even said he briefed his colleagues on talks with Israel leaders on pauses and concrete steps on minimizing harm to Palestinians in Gaza. So what is the response there to Secretary Blinken's comments and the G7 statements?
Well, I think Israel, says it doesn't necessarily oppose a pause, but it has to get its hostages out. They say that that's also a humanitarian situation. And, I think Israeli officials feel like the world is forgetting that this all began with an unprovoked Hamas attack on Israel. Thousands of gunmen crossed the border, went into these civilian communities like the one I just described, Kfar Aza, and just murdered, women and children in their beds. So Israel feels that, Hamas is clearly the provocateur in this and that the world is kind of forgetting that. That said, there is concern over the rising civilian death toll. Israel has suggested that perhaps Gaza civilians could be housed temporarily in Egypt in the Sinai Desert. Egypt has so far been not willing to take any Gaza refugees. Also, all of these people who live in North Gaza, they don't really have homes to go back to. Northern Gaza, Gaza City, whole neighborhoods have been destroyed. So it's not clear, the winter is coming. Right now it's not that cold, but in another couple of weeks it's going to start getting cold. Where are these people going to live? How are they going to have electricity? Who's going to take care of them? So I think there is a growing concern. This isn't something that can be solved overnight.
Our reporter Linda Grandstein on the Israel-Hamas conflict. Thank you for your input.
Thank you.
Mediators in talks in Jeddah say Sudan's army and the paramilitary rapid support forces have committed to easing humanitarian aid deliveries and implementing confidence-building measures. The news was announced on the Saudi state news agency SPA, but does not say that the deal includes a ceasefire. The Reuters news agency says the mediators expressed regret that the two parties had not yet reached an agreement on a pause in the fighting. Instead, they agreed to work with the United Nations humanitarian agency, OCHA, to resolve impediments to humanitarian aid access. They also agreed to set up a line of communication between the army and the RSF and tone down inflammatory rhetoric. They also said they would apprehend a prison escapee soon after the war began. Members of ex-President Omar al-Bashir's Islamist regime said they were part of a wider breakout of prisoners. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Somalia's National Disaster Management Agency says the worst flooding to hit the country in decades has killed at least 29 people and forced more than 300,000 to flee their homes, with the figures likely to rise. The announcement follows heavy rains that have inundated towns across East Africa. Authorities have scrambled to rescue thousands of stranded people from the flooding, which comes on the heels of the region's worst drought in 40 years. African leaders are pushing for renewal of a preferential U.S. trade policy that allows them duty-free access to the U.S. market that is set to expire in 2025. Kate Bartlett spoke to U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai about U.S.-China competition at the annual summit of the African Growth and Opportunity Act in Johannesburg and visited a factory that does business with both countries.
These South African macadamias and dried fruits may be small individually, but they have a big impact for many of the people working at this factory called Empire State Trading, including Maxwell Sukazi.
Yeah, now I'm working there 15 years, and then it's my first job. I get it from Empire. I'm coming from a place that's on a rural area. There's a shortage of the jobless side.
Sukazi supports a family of seven on his income. He's packing product that will go to markets around the world, including to the United States under the African Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA. Launched in 2000, AGOA is a U.S. duty-free policy for eligible countries that has been credited with job creation on the continent. But the amount of product exported to the U.S. when compared to the other main markets of Europe and China fluctuates based on market demand. Peter van der Vesthuizen is one of the owners of the family-owned business.
The year before, the U.S. Probably took 50 or 60% of our crop. Where this year it changed, where the U.S. probably only took 10 or 15% of our crop, where the Chinese have taken, call it 70% of our crop.
Van der Vesthuizen says there are differences in doing business with each country.
It's completely different cultures to start off. Payment terms, everything is very different. The Chinese has very strong importance around relationships, etc., etc. Well, I think in the U.S. it's more business-like. What can you offer? What can you pay? There's relationships obviously involved as well, but it's more black and white.
There are also other differences between China and the U.S. China is sub-Saharan Africa's largest trade partner, and the U.S. ranks third based on 2021 World Bank numbers. At the annual AGOA summit, hosted by South Africa this year, U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai told VOA Washington is prioritizing the continent.
Yes, China's footprint in the global economy in terms of trade is enormous. We know that. That is true in many of our conversations around the world. We feel very strongly that the type of partnership the United States brings and can bring is inherently different from what other partners bring. And that is why we are focused on enhancing and building on a U.S. partnership with Africa.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa has called on the U.S. Congress to renew AGOA before it expires so there can be more investments and more jobs. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg, South Africa.
UNESCO says Africa continues to experience a shortage of teachers in many schools due to an increased number of students seeking education and the lack of enough resources to improve the education sector. The UN agency says the continent needs at least 15 million teachers to teach primary and secondary students by 2030 to address the shortage. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
Africa has successfully enrolled more students in class in the past decade, but the quality of education has been questioned due to teacher shortages in many African schools. The United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, says despite some gains in the past 5 years in teacher recruitment, progress has been slow and many countries need to increase the number of teachers they recruit yearly. Patrick Nkengne is a senior education analyst at UNESCO. He says a small number of teachers are attending to millions of students in Africa.
when a classroom welcomes more than 100 students instead of the about 50 students it was built for, or as opposed to a ratio of 40 to 50 students per teacher recommended by the norm and standards, it clearly shows a shortage. As the number of classrooms in these conditions increases, the issues of shortages becomes acute.
For Africa to reach its education goals, UNESCO says the continent has to recruit at least 15 million teachers by 2030, both in primary and secondary schools. The agency said the Central African Republic, Chad, Mali and Niger will need the highest number of primary teachers, with 6% or more growth annually. In secondary education, higher annual growth in teacher numbers is needed in many African countries. Emmanuel Manyasa is an education expert based in Kenya. He says many schools are producing uneducated children due to the lack of teachers.
So you have both dissatisfied teachers and dissatisfied learners. The learners aren't getting the attention and the support they need. The teachers are overwhelmed by the big numbers and the long hours of teaching, which don't even give them time to prepare for lessons. So they come to class unprepared, disenfranchising learners even more. And eventually our schools just become growth centers where children go to grow with very little learning happening there.
Some experts blame financial constraints and the few resources available are not utilized, leading to a waste of resources. In countries with enough teachers, Ngengne says, they struggle to provide quality education to the learners due to poor teacher qualifications.
In a normal situation, a teacher must be adequately equipped to care of the students so that they effectively acquire knowledge at school. Unfortunately, it was demonstrated that in many cases, a considerable number of those who are supposed to play the role of teachers does not even have the mastery of the subject they are supposed to teach. In those cases, students cannot learn because basically they don't have a teacher in front of them. Those cases are not easy to identify. To do so, system needs to make teacher pass a test.
Experts say there are not enough resources to conduct tests to check the educational knowledge of teachers. Manyasa says teachers need to be encouraged to work hard to reach areas to bridge the gap of those not getting an education.
We need to be able to make sure there is fair distribution of the teachers across the country. And with that goes the issue of how do we incentivize teachers to work in areas that are generally not preferred. Mostly they are not preferred because of harsh climatic conditions, sometimes because of perennial insecurity problems, sometimes because of the fact that they are rural. So how do we incentivize teachers to work in those areas so that we can improve the distribution of the teachers across the country? I think that is critical.
UNESCO is urging African governments to assess the anticipated teacher requirements for the next 3 to 10 years, reflect on an initial training approach that can produce the necessary number of teachers, and ensure adequate resources for the recruitment and training of additional educators. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
A year away from the next U.S. presidential election, Democrats and abortion rights advocates won a series of victories in elections in several states yesterday. Voters in the state of Ohio approved a constitutional amendment guaranteeing access to abortion and other forms of reproductive health care. The measure follows the U.S. Supreme Court's decision last year to overturn the 1972 Roe v. Wade decision that had protected abortion rights. Ohio was one of several states where an abortion ban went into effect as a result of the court's decision. In the state of Kentucky, Democratic Governor Andy Beshear won re-election after a campaign that included advocating for exceptions to the state's near-total abortion ban. Voters in the state of Virginia denied Republican Governor Glenn Youngkin's hope of putting the state's legislature in his party's control. Democrats held on to a slim majority in the state Senate while taking back a majority in the House of Delegates. Republicans did score a win in the state of Mississippi, where Governor Tate Reeves earned a second term in office. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Kayla Williams, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.